It's the Mind Team Solutions Podcast. Leverage your leadership with better communication and stronger relationships. Today, we're joined by leadership speaker and coach, Shelley Rowe. In the first of a three-part conversation, Shelley reveals why it's so important to incorporate thinking and feeling into our decision-making. Click the link in the episode description for even more content related to this episode, including detailed show notes and more about Shelley and her company.
This show is about ideas, getting, clarifying, implementing, and supporting ideas. I interview people who put ideas into action, realized their dreams, achieved their goals, and followed through with their intentions to bring you best practices you can use right away to actively create your own success. And I interview experts in a wide range of fields who are resources for you to call on to make an income and an impact with your ideas. And the person I have today, my guest, is the latter. She's one of those experts that you can call on to get your ideas out of your head. She is Shelley Rowe. Shelley, welcome to Idea Success with Sylvia.
Thank you so much, Sylvia. It is my pleasure to be here with you today.
And let me do the usual opening stuff when a lot of people listen to the program without looking at a screen. So let me read the program title and description for those folks. And I titled the program, Just Make on Your Ideas. The description is overthinking and underdoing. There's both a science and there's your gut involved in making decisions. So learn from Shelley Rowe, author, speaker, and recovering engineer, how to make more and better decisions and overcome inaction to make your ideas, your dreams, your goals, and your intentions your reality. And so, Shelley, I do not usually read bios, even though I ask for them. But the first question I ask all my guests is, so give the listeners a little brief how you got to this point, because your story, I think, is a very fascinating story for those who were still in the workplace. So kind of how'd you get to this point?
Well, Sylvia, first of all, I love the title for the program. I mean, just make a decision already, right? We all get stuck sometimes in that overthinking place. And I like to say that I am a highly accomplished overthinker. I can overthink pretty much anything. And I come by it a bit naturally. I was trained as an engineer. I've spent the vast majority of my career, about 30 years, in the engineering profession. And, you know, there was a time, Sylvia, when I was a mid-manager and was doing okay, but I really wanted to get to the executive level, but I could tell that something was different with them, and I couldn't figure it out. Thankfully, we had a counselor there, an employee assistance counselor, and I went to see her. And she said, well, you know, why are you here? And I said, I don't know why I'm here. I can't think of anything that's wrong. And she said to me, I'm not interested in what you think. I want to know how you feel. And Sylvia, that was the turning point for me, because it began to make me understand the value that there is in how we feel. And I began to very consciously, thoughtfully think about how I felt and bring it into my decision-making in the workplace. And it changed everything. It was that realization of that we have to combine thinking and feeling, what I call cognition and intuition, that made the difference in my career. It actually made the difference in my life. And I eventually did get into the executive level. Today, I use that experience and talk with others who get stuck in that overthinking place, or who make knee-jerk decisions, which is a different kind of decision-making, and help us understand how do we get to that balance point between thinking and feeling, between cognition and intuition, and I call it info-tuition.
Mm. Now, before we get into the info-tuition, you know, you're an experienced executive leader, I'm emphasizing this a little more for listeners, because there's a lot of folks out there in this place in their lives, or in their heads especially. Not necessarily exactly what you do, but still in the workplace. So you're an experienced executive leader. You were a transportation engineer with a 30-year career. You must have started when you were 2, because I've seen you. you hold an MBA, and I want listeners to know this. because we won't say who you work for, because I know, but we won't say it. Let's just to say a very, very, very large agency in this country. And so to say that you were told to feel in addition to think, to me, seems counterintuitive to, quote, big business. I mean, I came from, a major corporation. And likewise, if somebody had said, how do you feel? Most people would say, who cares about feeling? Let's just get it done. So
yeah.
how did you make that transition in your head?
Yeah, and that's a good question. You know, it's because I do speak with a lot of technical groups and engineering groups, and it's a very unusual thing to have an engineer talking about intuition or talking about how you feel. But it was my experience with it. You know, I began to try it out and try it on for size. And what I learned just from experience is that those feelings, first of all, we can't ignore them. That it's who we are, it's how we're built, and we can't ignore them. So although I was taught as a little baby young engineer that there are no place for feelings at work, it's impossible, and it's a really bad idea. So the other thing that I did, Sylvia, is because I knew that this had been kind of a game changer for me in my career, is I thought I'd ask other leaders, because I worked with a lot of them around the country. So I've interviewed 77 leaders, and they come from a very wide-ranging background, government leaders, political leaders, entrepreneurs, leaders in universities and associations, in a wide variety of companies and financial institutions, which you would also think would be very logically inclined. And Sylvia, everyone but one said that intuition was absolutely essential to their leadership success. They could not do without it. Well, that's pretty amazing. And then the other thing that happened that was a real game changer for me as well, and this is much more recent. As I was doing these interviews, it just happened that I was reading a book on neuroscience. And as I read that book, what I read mirrored what I was hearing from these executives. And I began to understand that the neuroscience explains a lot of what goes on with us and explains what we would call intuition. And for the people I work with and my audiences, because of the neuroscience, it makes intuition no longer woo-woo. And that's huge.
Now, as you're talking, I thought, aha, there's the engineer, the research and the... And reading a book about neuroscience, farthest thing from my mind. So you're not quite recovered as an engineer.
No, I'm not recovered as an engineer at all. And the neuroscience is actually fascinating. When you read some of the information about it, when it's well written for normal people, then it's very accessible and you immediately understand why it's relevant in a leadership context.
So when we're sitting here with an idea in our head and we're busy trying to get it perfect and hear about doing the business plan and the market research and all of the things to get ready to work on our idea. While a lot of that stuff is important, how do we stop? How do we stop overthinking? And what, this may be a complex question here. How do we stop overthinking? When do we know when to go with our gut, which is what I'll call the intuition?
Yeah, and that's good. So, for example, let's kind of break that into pieces. We get that all the time. You know, turns out it's not just me who overthinks everything. We all sometimes get stuck in that decision-making process. So, Sylvia, I'm going to ask you, and I'll also ask those who are listening, just to think back on a time when you were trying to make a decision and you found yourself saying, you know, I am just making this harder than it has to be. Or, oh, we have been over this again and again and again. Can you think about, how does that feel when you're in that place?
Oh, gosh. Well, it feels like I know I should be moving. I know I should be getting somewhere. I know I made these intentions, but I'm not getting there. That's actually a thinking answer. It feels, see, there I go. I don't know, it feels frustrating. It's disappointing. It's doggone it, I know better, but I can't get there.
Yeah, and that's what I hear all the time. In my world, we call it analysis paralysis, and it does feel frustrating, kind of like that dog chasing its tail, right?
Okay. Yeah, so it's like I'm busy, but I'm not I'm not productive.
And you're not making any progress. It's just like this stuck churning place. So let's understand a little bit about what's going on. And so I will just do just a little bitty bit of the brain science just so that we understand that this overthinking thing is real. It's something going on in our brain. So we're not odd. We're not strange. It's a completely natural thing to get stuck here. When we are overthinking it, you can think about being out of balance. Is again, the best decision making is that balance place between thinking and feeling. So if we're overthinking it, then we have too much thinking going on and not enough feeling. But where does that overthinking come from? So in our brain, where we're making those decisions, it's the executive control function. It's kind of the working memory. Turns out that working memory part of the brain is actually a pretty small part of our brain. And it has certain characteristics, of which it holds very little information, like only 4 pieces of active information we can hold in our working memory at one time. That part of our brain is also very slow in processing information for the brain and takes a lot of energy. So, for example, Sylvia, perhaps you've had a situation where I know in a lot of the work that you do with clients, perhaps you've been in a situation where you are working with someone and you're just focused and you're thinking so hard, but you've just been in a meeting all day, but you've been thinking very hard all day, and you get home and you're exhausted, right? It's like, why am I tired? You know, I've just been sitting around in a meeting all day. It's because you've been using that working memory part of the brain and it takes a lot of energy. So when you get into that overthinking place, you're probably working on a problem or puzzling over an idea that you want to implement that has a lot of facets to it. But you're working with a part of the brain that only can process a limited bit of information, and it takes a lot of energy. So you just get in this cycle, just going around and around and around, going over it again and again and again, more data, more information, and we think that's going to help us, and that's when we get to that stuck place. And what we have to do when we get there, first of all, is recognize it and go, oh, I am overthinking this. I'm out of balance. I need to bring more of the feeling into the picture.
Wow. And you just described exactly, you're right. A lot of what I do is do strategy sessions with individuals and with teams. And after about, and in fact, I tell them when they schedule to work with me, I say, we're going to do a strategy session. We're going to be about, I'll say 4 hours or so. And I mean, that is close the door. I'm pumping questions and they're talking and we're thinking and we're figuring out alternatives. And I tell them, I said, can it be all day? I'd like to schedule you for a day. I said, your brain's going to hurt. My brain's going to hurt. After about 3 hours, it will be pushing it at 4. So that's kind of what you just said may explain why our brains hurt after such a focused session.
That's exactly right, Sylvia. And in fact, what some of the neuroscience is telling us is that we actually we'll do better if we break our intense work like that up into chunks, like, you know, half-hour chunks and take a break.
Wow.
Because the brain, it can't process and it can't stay focused for that long, and it needs that little bit of break. And you'll probably find that, I'm sure, in the work that you do, that if you take a little break, maybe have everybody walk around, get something to eat, which also helps with the blood sugar, then they're able to come back and focus again. But it does take a lot of energy, and the more we understand that, then the better we can manage our time, our energy resources to do the hardest work that we have to do when our brain is actually at its most active and at its peak before we wear it out in the course of the day.
Okay, this is, I've got like more questions here. So you just said, all right, to hit the brain when it's most active, and I know you talk to different people and they say, oh, I'm not a morning person, or I am a morning person, or I do my best thinking at night, at midnight. I mean, are there really different times of day for different people when their brains are active?
Absolutely. And we all, I think it's very important, and one of the things that I try to work with people is to understand your natural energy patterns. So in my case, my high energy is in the morning. For I have a person that I've worked with before, and their high energy pattern is in the evening. So that's important for, in both of our cases, to know that. So, for example, in my case, I know my high energy pattern is in the morning, So if I have work to do, like I did this morning, as a matter of fact, I had some creative work I needed to do, putting some materials together, a new program together. It takes a lot of concentration, a lot of creativity. I do that first thing in the morning, and I know that that's when I need to do it. And things like checking my email, following up on phone calls, I can do that in the afternoon when I have little snippets of time, and it doesn't take so much concentration. Someone else whose high energy period is in the evening would reverse that. Do little things in the morning, little things when their energy is low, and then as their energy picks up, that's when you want to focus. So that's the easy part. But the other part to marry up with that is that as we go through the day, situations happen to us, situations hit us that require us to focus in that moment, or they are very emotional. And all of that also drains our energy. So it would be entirely possible that if you're upset about something or stressed or overwhelmed, that that brain, even if it's in your high energy time, is not going to function as well as it could if you are calm and really have a good sense of alertness. Now, that's probably more than you wanted to know, but there you go.
That's why I have you on, because, you know, you're breaking things down. You're breaking highly technical stuff down to, you know, plain English, so that listeners can at least understand why they're, you know, why they've got good times in a day and why they've got bad times in a day, or less focused times. So how do we, I'm going to go back to the overthinking. You know, you said that the thinking part of our brain really can only hold so much, four pieces of information at a time. We have so much more capability in our brain, though. So how do we either train our brain, or what do we do to be better at? You know, where do we find more brain resources to be better at making decisions?
That's the beautiful thing about it, Sylvia, is that we have all these resources. What I like to explain to people is, you know how we say, oh, I'm going to file that away, as in filing it away in our mind. Well, that's kind of what your brain does. So whenever we have an experience, we think a certain thought, do a certain behavior, your brain, it fires up a specific set of neurons, and each set of neurons that it fires is unique to that particular thought process or that experience. And it files it away like in file folders in your head. So you have all these file folders that are created from your life's experiences. So that's great. The trick becomes making sure we give our brain a chance to use all that experience. So that's why overthinking is such a problem, because we're not taking full advantage of all of the resources that we have at our disposal if we just learn how to bring that other stuff online.
Let me see. Where do I go from here? Because I'm thinking, all right, we've got, so there's lots of, the brain is firing like crazy. We've got lots of ideas. A lot of my clients are creative. And so I help them turn all of those ideas into some actual action strategy, which then makes them groan. But so we've got a lot of ideas, too many of them to focus on. How do we file them into these folders and not worry about losing the good stuff we've been thinking?
Yeah, there's a couple of things on that. You know, if you want to, and that gets in the whole area of memory and creativity. One thing that is very important is the brain, if you write things down, that helps. And I mean handwrite things down. Some of the research is showing that, like, for example, if we're listening to a webinar and we're typing things out as we listen, your brain is engaging in some ways. But if you actually write it down longhand, then you're having to listen, identify what's the most relevant things, because you can't write as fast as you can listen. And then translate that into something that you write on paper. That entire process means your brain is processing the whole time. The other thing that really helps is sleep. As it turns out, the brain will consolidate memories much better during sleep than during awake times, because we're so distracted. You know, we're our own worst enemies. We're so distracted. And that's the enemy of memory. Multitasking is the enemy of memory.
Oops, go ahead. The irony of what you just said is get sleep, but when the ideas are flowing, I wake up at 2 a.m. and that's the end of sleep.
But you know, that's a great thing. So what's going on there? That's what I call an aha moment. And I've learned, Sylvia, and I'm sure you have too, I keep a pad and a paper and a pencil by my bed, because it happens fairly frequently. So what's going on? So imagine that you have all those file folders in your head, and you've got this problem that you've been working on, but you just get stuck with it. If you are too focused, then your brain is focusing on whatever activity that you're doing today. If you've got a lot of visual stimulus, then your brain is, that visual function is very powerful, and so it gets focused on that. And it won't let your brain sort through all those file folders that are your experience. However, if you go do something that distracts your mind, like go for a walk or go for a run or listen to music or whatever it is that makes you happy and relaxed, or take a nap, now it's as though there's this little librarian in your head. And that little librarian is busy sorting through all those file folders and finding ones that you didn't even think about, that you didn't think were relevant to this problem. And that librarian brings into your consciousness, but that librarian needs for it to be peaceful and quiet so they can do their work. Why it's so much easier for this sort of thing to happen when you're sleeping or napping or somehow distracted. We've all had that situation, right?
That sounds like it's the mental version of when I can't figure out where I put the pen or I can't figure out where the keys went, since I think of something else and don't think about it, then all of a sudden, oh, there's the pen, or oh, there's my keys. It sounds like this is the mental version of that.
It is exactly like that. And what the science now shows is that there's actually kind of a process that the brain goes through. So if you want to have more of those aha moments, more of those kind of creative problem-solving moments, then what you can do is again, to be aware, it's the subtle little clues in your brain that are trying to break through the distractions and the focus that we have. So first of all, if you understand that there is relevance in those little subtle clues, then it helps to be in a good mood, the research shows. And then if you can reduce some of those visual distractions, distract your brain, give it a rest, give it a break, that will enable it to put all those pieces together, let that librarian do that work, and you're much more likely to have one of those aha moments happen.
Wow. I'm going to have to take a break for a minute or two. When we come back, let me get you focused on something that I've heard you speak about, and that is, you say there's four steps that are involved in ending overthinking. Actually, I do a workshop called Overthinking and Underdoing. Let's get things done. So this is going to be a great resource as an aside for some of what I've been doing in that workshop, which has not been nearly focused on the brain. So when we come back, let's talk about those four steps kind of more succinctly so that folks have here's step one, here's step two for getting out of overthinking. So think on that, and we'll be right back.
That was the first of a three-part conversation with Shelley Rowe. You can learn more about Shelley by clicking the link in the episode description. There you'll find detailed show notes with the top lessons from today's episode. And you can continue the conversation with us by visiting our website, mindteamsolutions.com. We'll see you next time.